So I've noticed that Matt's got his hand up. So can I just see your mobile for a sec? Thanks very much. Very nice. Thank you. Give it a tick. Come on. Right. You can have this back in a year. So after a year, Matt can come back. He can pick up this mobile from me. He can catch up with his texts and his emails and any phone calls, would they happen. After that year, he can have a couple of days with his phone. Then it's back in my pocket. Is that all right? Yeah?
No?
Okay, good. That's a yes. And he can then catch up with everything he did.
Fair enough.
Good. Right, back to the passage. So, I don't like it up here. Hannah is one of those characters who you kind of gloss over in the Bible a little bit, perhaps. She's one of those characters who we hear about in Sunday school, or we hear sermons about, and we go, oh, okay, fair enough, thanks, Hannah. But she had one of the most incredible ministries that you'll come across, I think. And her story starts with her desperately wanting a child. And that's something that people have struggled with throughout the ages. And she, in particular, wanted a child. She wanted a son. And her husband, Elkanah, however you say it, we'll go with Elkanah for today, it wasn't so bad for him. You know, he'd got another wife. He'd got other children with that wife. And so whilst he understood the pain that his wife was going through, and he understood on a certain level what she was suffering with, he didn't quite get it. You know, he had family elsewhere. And not only was Hannah struggling with this idea of not being able to have children, she had the other wife sat there, and, you know, certainly once a year when they went to the temple, if not more, this other woman was goading her, going, oh, you can't have kids. I've got plenty of kids. Now, how cruel is that? And how belittled and insignificant she must have felt when that was the big part of her life, the thing that she really wanted more than others, and all the time she had to put up with this other lady goading her. She was distraught. She was unable to conceive, and she's being reminded about it every day, probably. And she's got this husband who, whilst he tries to understand, he doesn't quite get it. You know, he says that, you know, probably fairly blokey thing. Well, don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? You know, there's a difference between loving your husband and loving your children. You know, they are different things. And whilst he's probably trying to be helpful, like we do as chaps, he says sexistly, probably not helping all that much. So they go to the temple, and Hannah is there again. The way it's phrased in the passage is, it seems like they go there every year, and I'd be really surprised if this was the first time she went in and prayed for a child. It would be It wouldn't seem logical, really, that this was the first off. But she is weeping and so distraught that Eli the priest thinks she's drunk. You know, that's some fairly significant distress, you know, if you're in such a state that you look drunk. And, you know, she's there, she's pouring her soul out, but she carries on. You know, and all those times leading up to that, the years before where she's been goaded by the other woman, she's still there in God's presence, and she's still crying out to him, and she's still asking for that thing that she longs for more than anything else. It seems as if she's reached the bottom. You know, what more can she give? You know, she's so distraught. She's so poured out that she's got nothing left to give. But again, she carries on. And she makes one of those promises, and I don't know whether it's just me who does this, but when things are going a bit bad, you make that promise to God. God, if you do this for me, I'll do this for you. I'll give up something, or I'll take up something, or I'll be better, or I'll do X, Y, or Z. She makes one of those promises. Again, from her distress, she says, if you give me a son, I'll give him straight back to you. That's pretty big, isn't it? That's pretty hardcore. You know, if you can't cope without your phone for a year, how could you cope without your child for a year? But God heard Hannah's cry, and she conceived. Now, this passage has got everything. You know, it's got the other woman, it's got, you know, relationships, it's got accusations of drinking, it's got a little bit of sex in there as well. Sorry, am I allowed to say that in church? But it's all there. And so she goes home and she conceives and she has that child. And imagine how amazing that must have felt. Imagine the joy from receiving what God has promised. It says in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 12, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life." You know, the idea of waiting so long for something and it arriving finally. But how hard must it have been, even in that joy, to know, oh, what have I got to do? What have I promised God? This child will serve him and we'll have to go back to the temple. Now, what I should have said whilst I was taking Matt's mobile off him is that I'm useless with mobiles. I drop them. I mess about with them. I try and update them and it often goes wrong because I don't entirely know what I'm doing. So I brick them so they don't work anymore. I've smashed screens. I've made a right mess of them. But yours will be all right. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Probably. Hannah, when she gave up her child, you know, it says when he was weaned. Now, what do we understand that to mean? I had a look into it, and there's quite a bit of debate in amongst the commentators about when weaned means. You know, we kind of think of it as when they've started eating proper food, you know, starting to kind of digest stuff properly, not just milk. That's one idea, you know, and sort of in those sorts of times, that could be kind of 2-3 years old in some cases. Other commentators say it was when you were a bit more able to do stuff, you'd learnt a bit more about life, so maybe 7 or 8 years old. And then some people think that it was about 12. So when you were able to actually be useful in the temple, largely, I don't think it really matters how old Samuel was when he got sent to the temple. Because 3, 7 or 8, 12, still going to be a huge wrench for this mother, her beloved, longed-for child, having to go away. Her having to take him to the temple and say, "Son, I'll see you in a year." How hard must that have been? But also, as I am terrible with mobiles, she was not giving her child into this wonderful, happy church family that perhaps we think about. The guys who were ministering there, Eli's sons, were horrible people. You know, they stole from the church. They stole from the temple, sorry. They didn't take their role seriously. They didn't respect their father. They didn't respect God. They stole the sacrifices that people were bringing. They slept with the temple prostitutes. They were horrible people. Now, if your child is at any age, 12, 14, 16, 18, how much do you want to hand them over to people who you know are dishonest and aren't living the values that you so desperately want in your child? And Hannah clearly knows about the words of God. She knows about the teachings because she's been to the temple year on year on year, and she's probably seen these guys extorting from people and acting in a way that isn't godly. And yet she still goes through with it and hands over her child, and she trusts God to look after him. How brave must she have been to do that? And how much faith must this lady have had to go through with her promise? But her act of enormous sacrifice brought about something incredible. Samuel became a huge figure in the Bible. He was faithful to God. He understood God's heart. He prophesied. And He was in step with God. From his earliest days, when he first heard God's voice, right through to his final days, he was there. He anointed Saul and David as kings. He was a prophet, and you can read all about him in the two books of Samuel and all of the things that he did with God's help. So this woman who was bereft, who was barren, who had nothing, who was taunted, who was abused, ended up being the mother of an incredible figure. Even though she suffered loss, that's what became of it. But it doesn't end there. In chapter 2, verse 21, it says that she gave birth to 3 sons and 2 daughters. So God continued to bless her on the back of her sacrifice, on the back of her faith. So what am I suggesting here? What am I saying? Where am I trying to go? Well, I'm not suggesting that works are more important than faith. As Ali said this morning, you know, it all stems from our relationship with God. Hannah sought God first. She was there in the temple, and even when it hurt, and even when she knew she had to put herself into that difficult situation with the other wife, she still went. And her first instinct was to pray and to seek God. And from that relationship with him, everything else was built. What I am suggesting is that it doesn't make us bad Christians to plead with God. For those things that we yearn for, we can go back and we can ask. And it's okay for us not to understand what God's playing at. How it seems for, you know, why won't he answer my prayer? Every year, over and over again, I've come back and I've prayed this same thing. Why won't God answer me? That's okay. We don't understand it. But what God does understand is he understands our struggle, and he understands that we need time to get our heads around things sometimes. And maybe that's why we're waiting. Maybe it's another reason. But what I'm saying is keep going. At that time where it feels hard and it feels like you've reached the bottom, keep going. God is faithful. It says in the Bible, God deserves mercy, not sacrifice. So what about us? What are we longing for? What have we been asking God for over and over and over again? What breaks our hearts? What doesn't make sense? What is it that we struggle to understand? What is it about God that we don't understand? How can God let this situation carry on? When Hannah received her blessing, she didn't take Samuel to the temple because she had to. She took Samuel to the temple because she wanted to, because she loved God first and foremost, and she recognised what he'd given her was a gift. It doesn't mean that was easy. I'm fairly sure it wasn't easy at all, but she did it. So how does this apply to us? Well, maybe it's about understanding that it's time to let your kids go to school, university, to move out of the house and get jobs, to leave the protection that you have for them. And it's entirely understandable. You know, you've got to let them out into the big, scary world full of bad people. But God is there and God is looking after them. Or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe we are the people looking to move. Maybe we're the people looking to step out of that comfortable existence that we know and we love and let something go and move on. Maybe it's about giving up the idea of that brand new telly that you've had your eyes on for ages, and you think, I could just stick it on the credit card and it'll be fine. You know, I've kind of got a bit obsessed about this thing. Maybe I could have that. Well, maybe God's saying to you today, don't put it on the credit card. Use that money for food bank. Increase your tithe. Do something like that. I don't know. Maybe it's about something else. Maybe it's about something that's personal to you or to me. Maybe God's saying, stop doing something and concentrate on me. Or maybe he's got God saying, take something up and concentrate on me. And who knows? Maybe our sacrifices will end up anointing kings.